What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hey, this is Kevin Hanchard. You are listening to Tobin Tonight.
I will start off by saying that I do have beef with Justin. Justin told me that John's name was Johan, and I was like, okay. And then when I went to interview John, I was like, I'm going to do some research before I interview John. So I looked up, I'm just like, everyone else is calling him John. I was like, where the fuck is Justin coming up with the name Johan? And then when I asked him, he was just kind of like, what are you talking about? And I was like, next time I see you, Justin,
kick him right in the nuts.
You're right dead in the nuts, man.
Yeah. He's long overdue for a swift kick right in the gonads.
Well, I pitched it to him in his episode. I'm like, dude, if you ever need an extra, that's just like a computer nerd. That's like the anti Justin that, you know, somehow convinces that you think it's Justin, but it's not Justin. And then I end up putting Justin in, like, I don't know, put him in what's the body water, the Harbor Grace or something.
Yeah.
Put him out there, and then it's just to like, yeah, there you go. There, I pitched myself in an episode. And then Justin said, oh, that sounds great. And I'm just like, no, don't, because then they'll like me and then you'll be recast.
Oh, that's too funny.
Yeah. I want to start off by saying, like, so we've had three already on. You were the last one. You were the holdout. I know we've asked you for like since season one and you're just like, nah, man, I'm too big of a deal. Like, you know, I was on Naturally Sadie. What do you want?
Yeah, it's hey, no, it's just the way of the world, man. What are you going to do? Disney shows are the way to fame and fortune.
You're basically like, you know what? Once he gets John on, then let me know, because then I'm going to make it sound like I was the big star. John is a co-star.
Yeah. Have you had Diesel on yet, though?
No, I haven't had Diesel on. I've still got
a ways to go, bro.
Yeah. I have to, channel my inner dog.
That's the Plum interview. I'm just telling you. I mean, you didn't hear from me, but that's
Plum. Yeah. I feel like he's very high up there to get. Like, you send, but like, you got to send him treats. You got to have, like, you know, it's a big deal. Yeah. And
when you do, just don't look him in the eye.
Don't look him in the eye. Everyone thinks that it's funny because everyone thinks that dog on that show is like, oh, you got to be like super friendly. And I'm just like, do your research on those dogs. Like, there's a reason there's a trainer. Okay.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way in, man. Yeah.
I know we're in what season? Is it season six?
Yeah, season six just premiered the other day.
And what is your takeaway on season six so far, Kevin?
I don't know. Have you seen the episode yet?
I have not. Now, listen. My mom watches it like all the time, to the point where I'm just like, we've seen this episode like four times. Can we just like find something else to watch? She's just like, no, there's nothing else on. I'm knitting and this is great. And I'm just like, I don't know how you can do both. Like, there are times where I will walk in halfway through an episode and ask her what's going on. And she's just like, oh no. I'm just like, how do you not know? Like, you're watching it. And she's like, I like the sound. And I'm just like, I wouldn't be able to do that. Cause the moment that someone dies or you have to figure, I'm just like, I'm invested. It's like Scooby-Doo as a kid. I didn't watch halfway Scooby-Doo and just be like, yeah, I know how this ends.
Yeah.
Like, no, now I'm invested. So
it's blasphemy, man. You can't do that.
I heard that you're like directing in one of these episodes as well.
Yeah. I'm in the process. Right now we're on hiatus.
Okay.
But once we get back, I have a few more days and then I'm right back in it. And I'm going to make my directorial debut in season six, which is pretty exciting, man.
So were the rest of the cast kind of like, oh, Kevin thinks he's bigger than us now? He's going into direct.
Oh, I mean, they've known that for quite a while. This is just only like confirmation of, and, you know, proof positive that I'm a big deal. I'm a really, really big deal. And, so, you know, my wife has known this. My kids have known this. Everyone who knows me has known this for quite some time. But now it's like actually getting the heavyweight belt.
Yeah.
But already being the people's champ.
Okay. You know? That's fair. Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. Listen, no, my cast knows that I am meekly and humbly walking into this gig. It's just something that I've had on my mind for a number of years in my career. And finally I'm getting this opportunity, this gift to be able to realize the dream. of being able to direct for television. And they, I mean, although we haven't started my part of it yet, I haven't actually been behind the lens yet and called roles and cuts and all that kind of stuff. And my cast has promised to be as difficult with me as possible. I know that when the chips are down, they're going to be really supportive, and I'm really looking forward to it.
So like, I'm kind of interested from the standpoint of, like, when do you turn the light from, say, acting to directing? Like, was it something that you were always in the back of your mind you wanted to do, and then acting was kind of like the process to get there? Or was it kind of like, I want to be an actor, I've done this for so long, now I'm kind of interested to see on the other side?
I think it's a little column A, a little column B, but it's mostly the second option that you just mentioned. Okay. I will always be an actor. I don't think there's ever going to be a point in my life where I hang up that shingle and moved to and exclusively become a director. But it's been something that I've always been fascinated with. My background is theater, right? That's what I trained in theater school and, you know, classically trained actor, all that kind of stuff. Right. But it's once I started doing television and I began to really understand the process that I became more and more fascinated with it and the technical side of it and the number of moving parts, the number of people who are involved in the process and how, you know, it goes so far beyond what you see on the floor and on the day and in the final product. Like, there's so much preparation in it that I thought to myself, I'd love to give this a shot. And it's been a number of years. It's been, you know, over a decade now that I've been sort of watching directors and shadowing them and following the process. But now it's just, you know, I think I'd be crazy if I didn't take advantage of the opportunity that being on a show for six seasons has provided me. You know, for someone who hasn't gone to film school and done the process that the conventional director has, you know, this is just a great way to at least try my hand and see if there's a future there, you know? And as I said, it's something that I think could potentially ultimately run parallel, but I don't think it'll ever take over. I've always thought of myself as a one trick pony, man. I say words. That's it. That's what I do.
I'll be honest with you. 'Cause when you said film school, like I now listen, there could be different programs in different parts of the country that treat it differently, but I went, so I'm in Ottawa now, but I got accepted at Carleton for film studies was my, because everywhere else was just like Bachelor of Arts, whatever. And then this one was film studies. And I wanted to go into kind of like the movie TV side. It was like us watching like 1960s films and dissecting it. And I was just still like, not what I had in mind for film studies. They're like, yeah, but they're like, by year three and four, and I'm like, I won't make it to year three and four. I'm like, I don't want to watch these films. So,
right.
I mean, listen, you're not missing much. You're not missing much if you're going to, like, if you had to say, listen, Pies, I know you want me to be a director, but I'm going to go do film school. They'd just be like, way to shoot yourself in the foot.
Well, hey, listen, I mean, there's pluses and minuses to everything, as I think I said before. And even as a theater school student, as an acting student, you know, you come out of theater school and you learn a bunch of stuff and you find that the first 5 years of your career are about forgetting what you learned in theater school. But then as you continue to work, you find yourself reaching back in difficult times for the tenants that you didn't think you needed. But, you know, they actually become building posts and pillars that you grab onto when you find yourself, you know, adrift at sea. So, you know, I think those are the things that I might be missing as a director, or, you know, the actual baseline, you know, fundamental facts about, you know, lenses and about angles and about vectors and all that kind of stuff. But I think the reason why I really want to do it for this show is that we've got a crew that is one of the best in the world. And I don't say just because they're my coworkers and friends, but it's because it's a fact. This crew is one of the best crews in the world. And I've grown to love, you know, Newfoundland, but the people in Newfoundland and the people on my crew tremendously. And if I couldn't take advantage of the fact that I think they have an affection for me, I don't know whether they love me or not. They may not love me at all. But if I could take advantage of the fact that they'd be willing to push in my direction and help buoy me through this situation, then, you know, I think I'd be crazy. So that's part of why I'm on this journey, man.
So as a director, do you have any, like, do you have any pull or say
in
more or less, like, 'cause every time that something comes up where it's just like Hudson and Rex is looking for extras, I'm like, okay. It's like, put it in a resume. And then it's just like, don't get a goddamn call, Kevin. Don't get a goddamn call. So I said it twice to, I think it was Mako on her episodes. I'm like, Mako, I don't know whose leg I have to like kind of push around here, but I'm just like, after sending in some audition tapes and nothing. They probably just see this mug and they're just like, ugh, can't cast that guy. It's like, we can put him as like in the back as an extra.
Come on, man. No, sell yourself short, man. Yeah. You got a future. You're gonna be on the show eventually.
I'll be there.
But there's only 500,000 people in the province, man. Yeah. By you know, sheer numbers, your number's gonna come up eventually. Come on.
It just be like, it's like our ratings are like really down, and we need something to like cancel us. Bring in Tobin. No. Tobin will be the death.
You'll be the new, you know, Marlboro man, the new sort of, you know, yeah, Harlequin romance dude, you know, on the show.
I'll be like when they when you watch The Office and they bring in like a second Dwight. I don't know what the character's name was, but it's supposed to be like the smaller version of Dwight. That'll be me. I'll be like Johan or John's like second guy, and they'll be like, you're the guy who messes everything up, and then Charlie has to fix it. And I'm just like, that's a great role. Can I last like 20 episodes? That'd be great.
You'd be like multiverse Charlie or something like
that. Yeah. Back in the day, Charlie. Yeah.
Bro, I think we're onto something, man. I'm telling you, I'll
pitch these ideas, and then someone just be like, that Tobin guy out of the gin, is he? Okay, shut him down. I'm writing this stuff down if you talk about it. Yeah, as long as I get credit, I don't care. Just put it as a post. Like, you know, it's like on the Tonight Show. Lorne Michaels has nothing to do with like the Tonight Show, but they just put him there as a credit because he's there. I'm just like, I'll take that.
Oh, on Saturday Night Live? Yeah.
Yeah. He's just there in the background. According to many of the actors that tell me things, I want to ask you, like, how did you get into acting? Because, like, for me, when I was younger, I used to watch SNL, and I was like, "That's going to be something I want to do one day." And then I realized that you actually have to go out and, you know, act. And then I was like, "Oh, maybe I'll do like stand up." And then I was like, "That means you have to have material." And then people are like, well, you can talk. And I was just like, well, then maybe I'll just do a talk show. And they're like, who's going to watch that? And I'm just still like, I don't know, but we'll try. But like, what got you into the acting bug?
I always say that it kind of found me, man. Like it was just an inevitability.
Yeah.
Truthfully, like I've always been blessed or cursed with the gift of the gab, right? Depending on who you talk to and who was, you know, in charge of raising me that day, like whether it's my mom or my dad or whatever, like whoever was off work that day and had to take me, like, you know, on the TTC, on the public transit to a doctor's appointment, had to like sit there and listen to, you know, a little chatty 4-year-old for 2.5 straight hours. Like I never stopped talking. My parents would say never stop talking. So, as I grew up as a young kid, I thought that I'd parlay that gift of the gab into being a lawyer, a litigator of some sort. I was sort of always fascinated with the law and whatnot. But as time went by, you know, I was more drawn to plays. Like I did my first play in fifth grade, and you know, people seemed to like it, and I was actually good at it. And I did another one in eighth grade. I did Oklahoma, you know, singing and dancing as you know, Parker in Oklahoma, and that went over really well. And then I went to Arts High School. That went well, you know, like girls seemed to like me because I was a good actor. So I was like, well, I can get girls by being an actor. Okay, so now I'm gonna go to theater school, and I did that. And you know, one thing just led to another. And once you graduate from theater school, it kind of behooves you, like you have to try, you know, you've graduated with a BFA, you got to at least go out and get an agent and, you know, try your hand in the real world. And by the grace of God, here I still am, you know, a couple of decades later. So, as I said, it's just always been, the path, you know, I come from a blue collar family, man. And, you know, being an actor isn't really the first thing that you'd think of to put food on the table.
Yeah.
But you know, it's, as I said, it's just worked out. It's just really worked out for me. And, I always thought that I'd do theater school or at least, maybe go to university for a real career, quote unquote, you know, be an engineer or, you know, be a lawyer or something like that. And then maybe pursue acting, but the acting thing just always kept coming back around and it was undeniable. And, you know, had to give it a shot and it's worked out.
So, I mean, I guess like I look at it from, if I was going into acting and someone wanted me to act on a podcast, cause like I like podcasting, that'd be like kind of a perfect scenario. But like I read through some of your credentials, like I looked at ones that I watched because there's obviously ones that like I've never seen, but I like I seen one for Suits. I remember watching Suits. So when you said about Lawyer, like when you got a role for Suits, were you kind of like, oh man, like this kind of brings like the best of both worlds. I can kind of act like I'm a lawyer. I can kind of act like I'm a big deal.
But that's what acting is all about, man. That's the joy of acting. Do you know what I mean? Is that is truly like you get to, like we're conditioned society to like to squash our worst selves and put forward our best selves and stuff. Acting allows you to be an ass, right? Like to find your worst self. Like on Suits, I was an evil African warlord who had murdered a whole bunch of people. Like, you know what I mean?
Wait, that's not you. No,
surprise, surprise. No, it's not. But I always say within us lies these people. Do you know what I mean? Like there's a part of you that, you know, goes, oh man, I could really steal Tobin's money or I could really, you know, whatever. And but you go, no, that's not the way we do it in society. And that's not the way good people do things. You know what I mean? But as an actor, you get to live out those fantasies and play them out and, you know, and let those parts of your personality live fully. And it just allows me to be a better person afterwards. It allows me to be a better, you know, friend and brother and partner and all that kind of stuff because I've lived out the worst part of myself on screen, you know?
It's funny because like when you see certain actors play certain roles and you grow up watching them in like two different dynamics, like I think it's John Lithgow that I've always remembered from like Third Rock from the Sun. Mm-hmm. And then like seeing him do, I think it's, what was the show called there now? It's like Dexter. And he's like a totally different character on like Dexter. I'm just like, this isn't the John Lithgow I used to watch on Treehouse singing songs to me. And this is a little bit dark. And then it's almost like, I'm sure he's still a nice person, but if you're that good of an actor, you're kind of like, but is he? Like, I'm kind of concerned. Like, is he? Like, is he friendly if I go up to him and he could be a little bit of that character? So.
Well, that's the thing, right? And that's why a lot of people are disappointed when they meet their icons, right? When they meet their idols, especially actors. Like, man, you play such a nice person. And now I'm walking up to you in you know, Ponderosa and interrupting you and your family at dinner. You're not so nice. But you know, people are complex. They're multi-layered and stuff. And you don't know really who the real person is unless they decide to peel back the onion and show you that. So, but as I said, it allows me anyway to be sane. There's some actors who get way, way into it and can't pull themselves back out and find out where that line is and who they are. But for me, it allows me to delve into the best parts of myself, the worst parts of myself, parts that I aspire to be, parts that I would never want to be, but honor them fully. Do you know what I mean? Which allows me to come right back to a nice, healthy place, you know, and be balanced, you know, and be available for my kids and, you know, drive them to hockey and dance and stuff. And, you know, and truly like not be, some people wake up one day and they realize they're like 65 and they never got to do the things they want to do in life. You know what I mean? They never got to tell their boss off. They never got to, you know what I mean? Ask their spouse for the things that they want. Like I wanted to go to like, you know, wherever. Yeah. I wanted to go climb a mountain, but I was afraid. As an actor, hopefully if you work and you're gifted with the opportunity to play, you know, many disparate roles, you get the opportunity to do all those things and to be all those people in some way, shape or form.
I think if I was ever cast for like a gig, I think I'd want to be like always cast as like the bad guy. So that when people like here's my theory of it. If you're cast as a bad guy, people like you for maybe being a bad guy, but like kids will never really want to come up to you and talk, which I'd be a little bit shattered. I'd be a little bit shattered about that because I do like kids. But the aspect of it is like, I would never have to disappoint you because like you'll never come up and talk to me. But then if I'm always playing a good guy and just say I'm having a bad day, and then for some reason, like there's someone there and you kind of like, you're like, dude, I just want to eat. I just want to eat. And that's like a 10-year-old kid. And then that's like their memory of you. Then it's just just a bad day.
You ain't fooling nobody, man. No matter how many bad guys you play, ain't nobody going to think that you're a bad guy. Everybody's going to still walk.
Come on.
You can't hide, Tobin. You can't hide,
I want to play a dick, like on just a TV show. So someone's just like, man, I knew he was an asshole, and I'd be like,
no,
that's how good I am. That's how good I am.
And you can try,
But
you can't, man. People are gonna be like, nah, man. Nah, look at that boyish smile there. Everybody knows.
I think I know why I'm not on Hudson and Rex. You were the one who turned it down. You're just like, you've seen the screenshot, and you're just like, He cannot be a bad guy. Look at that smile. He's not a bad guy. Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Call up John Lithgow, man.
Call up Johan.
Call up Johan.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Speaking of Hudson and Rex, like, we've had the other ones on. They talked about how they kind of got cast. Tell me a little bit about your backstory. Like, I know there's auditions. I think Mako said in hers, she was like surprised because it was like a while before she had a callback. And then originally they had two already figured out. And then she was kind of at first, I think she even said she wasn't sure if she had gotten it because it was just that lengthy of a process. But like, tell me a bit about like how they found you, like how the audition went and when you kind of knew like, okay, I got this role.
I think they sort of backdoored me into the audition because I was auditioning for a guest star role on the show.
Okay.
A character who's been in one of the early episodes and I read for it and I just thought it was just another sort of, maybe you get 4 or 5 days on set in Newfoundland, which is a place that I love. But I was in the room for way longer than anybody else was. You know, like when you're auditioning, you get to know the people who you audition against. They become friends of yours because, same look, same age, same, acting ability, all that kind of stuff. And we're all hanging out in the waiting room. You know, each person goes in and they have their 10 minutes or whatever. But my audition went on for like 10, 15, 20. Try it this way. Say it that way. Do it standing on your head. Can you do it drinking a glass of water? Can you spin these plates? Can you, like all these kinds of, like I was doing, the kind of stuff that you do when you're auditioning for a lead on a series. Okay. But I still didn't think anything. I just thought that either I sucked and they just wanted to see if I do it better or she, but I didn't realize that they were looking for this character. They were looking for the Joe Donovan character. And I guess either they had me in mind or I piqued their interest after I auditioned for the role that I had auditioned for. And then I got an offer for this role. And once again, I still thought, they said it was a recurring role, but I didn't know that it was, a character that would live on forever on the show. So it was a bit of a surprise because I did think I'd be in Newfoundland for maybe 2 or 3 months. And now we're going on season 6, which is actual a full 5th year of living in Newfoundland on and off. But I'm not telling you anything you don't know. It's there's no better place in the world to live, especially in the summer, man. Like it's a really, really great place. And I'm really grateful for the opportunity and the journey that I've
been. You trying to sell that to Kevin? Our summers suck. Come on now.
Your summers don't suck. They're just not long enough. That's all.
I came from Newfoundland to Ottawa to go to school. And I remember in September, I was just like expecting Newfoundland September. And I was like, this is still summer up here. And like, they had it up here for like the last 2 days that was still summer. Now it feels more Newfoundland because it's all rain up here now. But like, I was coming home.
The wind has finally turned. Yeah.
I was coming home like with a sweater on from school. And then like halfway home, I'm just like, why am I wearing a sweater? I don't need this till like December. But at home, I'm just still like, it's July and I'm out coaching soccer. I'm like, do you got another winter hat? This winter hat's like soaked. Give me another winter hat. like I need more winter wear. It's like when people say, okay, I'm going to Newfoundland. What do you expect? I'm just like, all seasons, bring it and pack it in the bag.
100%. Yeah. 100%, man. And that's always been the thing there. I mean, we used to shoot through the winters in Newfoundland. And now we realize, no, let's not that anymore.
It's not possible.
Let's not do that. Let's try to stick to the summer and the spring, summer and fall months. But the dead of winter, February, March, April, those are not the best times.
Mako had mentioned, because I guess a lot of you are coming from, say, Toronto, and then you relocate here to do like episodes in Newfoundland. But she said, I think it was like her first time coming here. It was during during COVID or Snowmageddon. And she was like, she just kind of felt very, I guess, depressed, isolated. And I was just like, man, It's like, that's how we all felt. And we were here. We were born and raised here. But I was like so surprised because I'm like, yeah, because she mentioned at first about not showing it was the right fit because I think she said she had like a baby and then she was trying to wheel it up a hill and it's slippery. And then if the baby goes, she goes, it's like, yeah, I get it. It's like, it's very hilly. But then I think she kind of got accustomed to it and got used to the culture. Cause I'm assuming we're still friendly people. I don't know. Sometimes I'll go around and be like, do we still have that? Is that still our badge of honor that we're friendly? Okay? Yeah.
Have you talked to her lately?
No, the last thing that Mako wanted me to communicate with her on, and we're actually going to bring it up next. So run great, great transition is that I noticed could be from season 4 to 5 or 3 to 4 that maybe it was more last season, but I was so used to you guys being kind of more of a collective whole, like almost like, and I even said it to her, like a Scooby-Doo kind of vibe, but now it's almost like each character, which is fine, has their own like backstory, but then it's like cut scenes of like, all right, we're going to go with John and Mako over here. Okay, Justin has his thing where he's now always kind of in a building and not really out on like solving the crime. And then your character's kind of got his own thing. And I'm just like, now it feels more like, I can't remember the word she used for it because I think they had a new person come in and direct or create. It was no longer like collective unit, like in a van. It was almost like every person now is assigned to a task and that's where you'll see them. I'm like, now it makes the show feel more longer than it used to be.
In terms of what does that mean? Is that good or bad? What does that mean?
Like longer for me, you know, for me, I'm like one person, but I just kind of like the idea of like working as a whole to solve the whole crime. But now where it's like each person has their own like niche, I guess it's like, you don't see Justin out with you kind of solving a crime. It's just like, he's kind of in his own computer lab. And I was just like, we're taking Justin away from the crime scene. Like this is now his thing. It just kind of made it like, we have to get Justin in the scene. So give him a cut scene for like 5 minutes. I'm like, or you could have just let him go out with the crew. But I guess there's another fan base out there that's like, but why would he be? Why would he be going out with them? He's not. And I'm just like, I don't know. It's like, I like the first couple of seasons where everyone was kind of like piecing together the puzzle. And then that's what solved it. Now it's almost like,
well, I don't think we'll ever get away from that.
Yeah.
In some facet. I mean, that's the heart of the show is that everybody has their gifts and their strengths and their thing. And, you know, Sarah's forensics, Justin is tech, Charlie is good old fashioned sleuthing. And mine is pointing the finger and recognizing their skills and, you know, and saying, you know, you're the smart guy here. You're the smart lady there. You're the smart dog there. Go do your thing. So I think they'll always in some way, shape or form, they'll always be a unit and they'll always work that way. I think as a storytelling device, I think every once in a while, you got to shake things up, not just for your audience, but also for your actors. Right. If it's always about, oh no, someone's murdered. Okay, let's go find out who did it. Let's talk to the wife. Let's talk to the husband. Oh my God, the butler did it with the candelabra in the parlor, blah, blah, blah. You're going to be off the air in a little while, like in short order. You know what I mean? So I think sometimes by filling in backstories of some of the actors, it allows the audience to become a little bit more invested in the characters. It allows them to say, oh, Joe Donovan has a daughter who is trying to find her way through love. Charlie and Sarah have a relationship, a budding relationship, but she's trying to deal with her ex. Jesse is, you know, whatever. He has an active love. There's all kinds of little things in there that you could just sort of feather in to allow people to buy in a little bit more. And sometimes it does make the actual crime. I don't think I'd ever become secondary because these are always B storylines. These are always B plots.
Yeah.
That should be there. So, you know, but then there comes times where you want the murder, the story to be the story. And I think this season is a little bit more focused in that direction. So it'll give you a little bit more of what you want. But I think you always have to go yin and yang and go back and forth in order to keep people on their toes, because the moment people can predict and say, oh, this is the moment where we're going to find out what happens. This is where Rex is going to take down the person or whatever. That's instant TV death. Right. So, you know, what do they say? You can never please all the people all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and if you feel like you have, then maybe it's time for you to move on. I think you have to keep people guessing and on their toes. And I think that's what we and the producers and, you know, the writers and the showrunners are trying to do in their collective wisdom.
Well, I feel like the positive side of all this too, is like when if you keep people engaged, like even someone like myself that will like, you know, tune in from time to time if it's on, or if like I'm excited to see an episode and I watch it, like I know how it's going to end. Like you will solve it, but it's just like, there are certain moments where you're like, okay, like this seems a little bit like, are they going in a different direction? Like the episode that comes on a lot, I think it's like FX Down Our Way too, is I don't know the show. Like, I don't know him like per title name, but it's just the one that he's like a firefighter and like somehow he kind of befriends everyone to trust him. And then it's like the scene where like John or Charlie is kind of in the hospital. And then he's kind of like the killer line of it is almost like, by the time they come here to find out like that I'm the bad guy, you're going to be gone. Everything's going to be destroyed. And he like apparently lights the thing on fire, like the whole kind of like hospital. Uh-huh. And that's like the very moment that like Rex comes in and like busts his ass. And I'm just like, okay, you had me there, because I was just like, I really thought that this was how it's going to end. Like, it's literally like he's gotten away with it. He like, there, how, but it's always like in the nick of time, someone shows up.
Right.
So it's like, okay, like you're still expecting it. Like you know, it's coming, but it's still like the lead up to it is still kind of interesting, where it's just like, what about if it's not this time? Like, you know, like the one where it's like, Justin's character like befriends a cop because they both kind of think that their bosses are dicks. And then and then next minute Justin's about to get his head blown off. And then it's like, I'm like, I just seen this guy on a TD commercial. Now he's going to blow this other guy's head off. I'm like, ah, it's like coming back to the whole acting thing. I'm like, hey, he got me. And then just out of nowhere, it's like, no, we caught you again. I'm like, oh, but you had me. Okay. You did have me there. I thought that was how it's going to end. Cause you never know. Yeah. Okay. So it is like, I do find it intriguing for certain episodes. So like, now, the other aspect that I do find is guest stars. Like, you've had a nice few guest stars come on. Like, I did torment Justin about this. I did torment Alan when we had Alan Hocko on about this. But I'm just like, you bring in Alan Hocko and you make him a bad guy. Yep. And I'm pretty sure all Newfoundland would have liked a crossover of Republic of Doyle, Hudson and Rex. And I'm told that that could still be in the works.
You did get a crossover Newfoundland of Republic of Doyle.
Yeah, but no, like, I mean, like, you brought him in as a bad guy. And I was just like, that was a very, like, yeah. I was going to watch you him as the episode.
Bring him in as Jake Doyle, man?
Why not?
CBC show. We ain't no CBC show. He had his show already. He's coming on our show. You know, when I was on his show, I did his show. I did his show. And I was like a crazy jury foreman or whatever. But, you got to go into something else. He had it,
You're basically saying he had his day. He had his day. Okay, I got
you. Yeah, man. Alan Hocko will be just fine. He's going to be just fine, man. Yeah. He doesn't need to be Jake Doyle. Jake Doyle, it will have his reboot at some point. I'm sure they're going to be a Republic of Doyle movie and lunch.
Oh, yeah. That's when you'll call him up and be like, yo, can I get in
there? Man, where's the Hudson and Rex on the Republic of Doyle? Like, Hudson and Rex is still on. What do you mean? I'm like, yeah, but.
Yeah, you know, but I just want that. Like, listen, I've become a director now. I've been an actor. Man. Like, I want that movie. I want that movie cut. Right?
Oh, yeah, man. People love Jake Doyle. Jake Doyle will be just fine. He doesn't need to show up on Hudson and Rex. And Alan was fantastic on our show. He wasn't even a bad guy, really. He was just a prisoner. He was a criminal.
Yeah.
He went to jail. And, people.
Yeah, he has to have like the Alan Doyle thing is, or sorry, the Alan Hocko thing, I should say, is that he needs to have that leather jacket.
Yeah.
That's his thing now.
And the GTO, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have, cause you're going now with six seasons strong. Yep. Do you have to have like, I guess a favorite episode of yours, or one that you're kind of looking back on and be like, this is the one that I really enjoy either working on, or I can go watch it myself. Not that I don't know if actors really watch themselves anymore. Like, some do, but I feel like for me, I don't watch my own stuff, cause I'm just like, man, what a nerd. But like, is there ones that you look back on and you're like, I like this episode, wasn't too fond of this one?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always ones that you're more fond of and less fond of, but it's still, for me, it's like picking your kids, man. Like, picking your parents and your kids.
What are you talking about? I can pick my favorite niece and nephew, because I only got one each, so I guess they are my favorite niece and nephew. Oh, sorry. There is Max, but he's a baby, so that don't count. No.
Well, by the time Max rolls this around, he'll be okay.
Oh, by the time he sees this, he'll be like, he'll dig it up and I'll be like 40. And he'll be like, remember how I told you I wanted this thing and you said it's too expensive?
Yeah.
And then he plays the clip. I'd be like, oh, blackmail? Okay.
Here's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering why you did an old man's voice when you said you're 40. You're like, yeah.
I feel, man, like I'm 32. I'm 32 and I feel like I might as well do the old man voice.
For someone who's already crested and passed the 40 mark, I'm like, why is he saying like 40 like he's like going to be geriatric at 40?
I turned like 32. Well, by the time this year is, I'll be 32. But like, you know, it's always weird to me because I came up to Ottawa to revisit like things like 10 years ago. And like, I don't know what I was expecting. I guess I was expecting things to kind of be similar. But then you see that you've changed. You've just grown. So all the things that you used to like when you're 22, you don't really like as 32. Your friends have kind of grown. So I'm kind of like in that standpoint where I'll wake up one day and like my knee will not be the same. And I'm just like, here we go. Here's the downfall.
Yeah.
It's like one day I could wake up and tumble out of bed and just be like, I'm fine. I know I fell over 5 stairs, but I'm good. Now it's just like I bend it the wrong way. And I'm like, I'm out for a week, guys.
You're 32. You got 3 years left before that starts to become a super reality, man.
Oh, thanks.
35, it all starts to fall apart, bro. But enjoy.
Thanks. Okay. Give me the heads up.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
For the final bit, Kevin, do you want to have a fun game of random questions?
Done. Let's do it.
How do you feel is the best way to overcome challenges in your life? That's a good
one. With a firm belief in yourself, right? It sounds really hokey and corny, but with a firm belief in yourself, if you know who you are, what you stand for, what you believe in, what you will take, what you will not take, what you want, what you don't want, what you will abide, what you won't abide, you'll make it through.
And I feel like I'm listening to a P. Diddy song here.
What's that?
So I feel like I'm listening to a P. Diddy song here.
It's coming, man. It's coming. You know, I got all kinds of skills you ain't seen yet. But that's the truth, though. Like, you know, it doesn't mean you're going to be perfect. It doesn't mean you're going to solve all the problems in your life and in the world. But you're going to know that the decision you made was made based out of a truth to yourself and out of, you know, a belief in who you are and what you value. Even if it's the wrong choice, it'll still lead you on the path that you need to be on in your life.
Yeah, that's fair. Is that almost like the easiest way of saying fake it till you make it?
No, it's about being strong and wrong, man. You know, that's what it is. Being strong and wrong. I fully believe in that. Like don't be ignorant and don't be ignorant of other people's opinions and what people value and the fact that you can hurt other people. But if you think that this is the right choice, then go for it. Don't apologize. Don't equivocate. Go for what you believe in. And if you find you've done the wrong thing, you do need to apologize, then apologize at that point.
Okay. This one's not a random question, but it's one to close it out. So Kevin, season 6, a lot of people are probably excited for it. I'd say like a lot of Newfoundlanders are excited for it, obviously because of the scenery and like what other places have they gone. But without giving too much away, what are some, I guess, things that people can expect in season 6 that, you know, to amp up that season, to really sell it to the people?
Look, you're always going to find out more about us, about Newfoundland. You're going to see more of Johnny's hair. It's a hair season, man.
Oh, okay.
You knew that Johnny had such luscious curly locks, man. You know, so Charlie gets a little bit more badass. There's less suits. There's less sort of constraints on the characters. I think everybody just gets to bust out a little bit. You know, Jesse grows up. Donovan gets a little, you know, butch and badass. Sarah gets a little more kick ass. And, you know, and Diesel or Rex, the dog, gets, you know, finds new ways to solve crimes, man. So, I mean, I think everybody gets a little bit more. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun for people.
All right. Well, that's good. So basically, we're going to clue it up by saying in season 7, maybe, just maybe, I'll make a cameo in season 7.
Done. Let's make it happen.
Okay. Yeah, because by that point, you should have directed a few episodes and be like, listen, I know a guy that could probably play a bad guy. And they'd be like, not Tobin. And they'd be like, but I get to say, I'm the director of this episode.
Yeah, done.
Yeah, it was really fun having you. Hopefully we'll have you back on again soon. And if season 7 comes and they tell me to audition and I don't get it, I'm just going to be like, Kevin.
You're in. Don't worry about it, man. It's all set.
That's going to do it for this episode of Tobin Tonight. Our thanks to Kevin Hanchard for coming on to the show. Remember, you can find past, present, and future episodes on TobinTonight.com, Spotify, and iTunes. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and leave a comment or two. For Tobin and myself, this is Jacob saying thank you for listening and good night.
I'm Connie Thiessen, the host of Broadcast Dialogue, the podcast. We focus on Canada and the challenges facing Canadian radio and TV, as well as highlighting those moving the industry forward from podcasting and streaming to new broadcast tech. Check us out at BroadcastDialogue.com or your favorite podcast app.
Do, did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first five episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all three of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.